It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
We're back with more of the Spiegel and Holmes show, live from Stadium Swim inside Circa Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Sometimes I get a good feeling.
It's so weird watching opening day open up all around the country from our vantage point here at Stadium Swim. And I was like, I do not recognize that ballpark. And I walk out and I'm like, oh, that's where the Rays are playing this year.
Oh, dude.
And what a random way to start the season. Rays and Rockies.
Yeah, man.
Seeing Chris Bryant run out there being introduced as the DH for the Rockies. And it's be like, oh, that's right. There are going to be two teams playing in minor league ballparks this year.
How about the Athletics, who used to be in Philly and then Kansas City and then Oakland and are now in Sacramento? Like, you can't call yourselves the Athletics when you move to Vegas, right? When you move to the fifth place.
I don't think they're moving here.
You don't think they're moving here?
I do not.
I
guess it's Shock Shane. That opinion was shocking.
I think you don't think so?
I don't think they're going to make it here.
Well, that's interesting. I don't think
we can do like a friendly bet for 3 years down the road.
All right, let's do that.
I'll be living in Montreal. And you can just Venmo me a dollar. Picture of a dollar.
You'll be the Tony La Russa of some show in Montreal. People be like, I want to talk about the Montreal Bagels and just how silly they are. And you'd be like, you relax, you're high.
Like, I'll be talking about FC Montreal, MLS soccer. As my part-time, I'm going to be the Rosner of Montreal.
Actually sounds like a pretty good life, I got to tell you.
It actually does. Now that I think about it.
You know, he's Lawrence Holmes, the Rosner of Montreal, which was a great Edgar Allan Poe.
It was. Yeah. That poem is one of my favorites.
Really thoughtful. Like, I didn't know anybody was behind the brick wall at that point.
It was really, really excellent. The Cubs last night, they did their thing. I was happy to see it. Ian Happ had a great night for the Cubs.
He did.
You got to see Tucker come in there and drive a run in. I felt like the headline for me of game three, because remember, this was the domestic opening for the Cubs. The headline for me was Cubs lineup works as expected.
Yeah, man. I'll tell you, they need to get production from those two guys, PCA and Miguel Amaya, were really terrific in like the last 5 to 6 weeks of the season. The numbers, their OPS plus overall, way better than every other part of the year. And they both had good springs, and both of them are expected and needed to step up. And last night they did. PCA made a small play that is key. And I know we're going to hear from Jed Hoyer in a second. And people need to, because it's connected to the Jed stuff that you're going to hear. We talked to Jed yesterday, the 5 o'clock hour. But there was a play where PCA was on first and a shortstop for the Diamondbacks made a terrible, terrible choice. And it came back to bite them. Here's that play from last night.
Shaw waits, the 2-2. A bouncing ball hit to short, fielded by Perdomo. His throw to second, not in time. PCA beats out the play, and the Cubs have the bases loaded.
Excellent play by Pete Crow Armstrong at first. So first and second, you know, they're not holding Pete Crow Armstrong on at first. So he gets a huge jump on this ground ball, and he goes flying in. The thing is, Perdomo lays back on this ground ball. He does not come and get it. If he comes and get it, he can shuffle this ball to Marte and get an easy force out at second. He does not. And great hustle by Pete Crow Armstrong, and he's safe at second to extend this inning.
Craig Counsell talked about PCA's speed last night because the next batter was Miguel Amaya, who had a three-run double off the glove of Corbin Carroll. Here's Counsell.
The Pete base running play is a play that is the type of thing we talked about a bunch this spring and a type of thing that I think we're capable of executing. You know, in that case, it was just we had the right guy in the right spot, but it's also the care factor of getting a big getting an aggressive secondary lead and thinking I can beat out, you know, a routine ground ball to shortstop. And the care factor is what's really important there.
Here's Cliff Floyd on Marquee after the game talking about PCA and his impact.
Yeah, he's a difference maker.
He is.
And, you know, when you think about his adjustments, I think that's what the league is all about. When you're not comfortable, and you can see on his face last year, he was trying to fit in. He was trying to, and that's what every youngster do. You try to fit in and come up and showcase your talents. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer. But I think when we saw him last year, it was just the uncertainty that was standing out more than the player and the stuff.
Good teams do stuff like that. Teams that maximize what they have do stuff like that. Whether you think of the Tom Kelly Piranhas and
the Piranhas, right?
And the Ron Gardenhire Twins, too. Or whether, frankly, you think of Craig Counsell's Milwaukee Brewers. Like, you can overachieve by doing little stuff like that to extend innings.
And that's part of the reason that, like, when we talked with Jed yesterday, I wanted to ask him about PCA. Because it, to me, speaks, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, because, you know, you're our baseball guy here at the Score.
I'm your Carrot Top guy now. That's my identity.
You're 100% our Carrot Top guy. That is not in dispute, sir. That is not. You deliver Carrot Top.
Never take
show.
That away from you. That's yeah. on your
no,
banner.
That is,
tell you what, it's the Sunday morning Carrot Top show is a big hit.
It should be.
Yeah.
But I look at the Cubs and say, okay, you added a guy who I think is a 6 WAR player. Can you also create a guy who's a 6 WAR player?
Man.
And when I look at who's available for them to create, the only person that comes, I'm sure Ian will be a 4-win player. Dansby, because of his position, will be a 4-win player.
And maybe more if the offense can do what it does.
And I'm not as high on Shaw as you are.
Yeah.
Maybe it's him at some point. But maybe. I think PCA, and I've had a 180 turn on PCA, I think that he is the most likely to outperform projections. And if you are able to get him to a place where he's legitimately a 4-5 win player, mm-hmm. this season, you're in great shape as a team.
And he's got a great start on that with the defensive position and the defensive quality and the base running. And it's really all about the plate discipline to get him to that next level. And there's a little pop there, too. I mean, that's why you get so excited about him. But what there is there, there's great instincts, man. There's great instincts and there's great baseball swagger from a dude who is maturing before our eyes.
Yeah, I really loved everything we saw. Him being smart enough to be like, hey, you know what? Let me attach myself to Justin Turner.
Hell yeah.
Like, there's a guy who's seen it all, right? Like, he's done it all in his career. Let me just pick his brain. And seeing those two guys interact the way that they did in Japan, and Jed even told us that yesterday, too, that he thought was really important, and he hopes it's important to what it is that the Cubs are and what they hope to do.
Yeah.
But the burning question for any Cubs fan is, are these guys good? Like, they asked you on Hit and Run last week. Cubs fans that wanted to talk were like, how good are they? Are they going to actually be competitive? We talked with Jed about this and asked him if he thought his team was a 90-win team.
Unclear. I mean, I think there's projection systems that say yes. There's projection systems that say no. I mean, ultimately, I think the beauty of this game is, you know, we need to go out and every day as an organization, from front office to coaching staff to players, that we need to try to exceed expectations and we need to optimize our performance. And that's really, to me, opening day is it's the first tee shot off the tee box. It's the first game of the season, and it sort of signals that baseball is back. But ultimately, for me, it's just, okay, this is the journey, and we need to, as a group, we need to outperform. And that goes really for everybody in the league, right? I think if we outperform, I think that we have a chance to be that 90-win team you're talking about, to feel like we're a really deep, solid team. I think, but every team in baseball, I think, is looking to outperform and to get the best out of their guys, and that's what starts today.
So, look, I know that if there's a Cubs fan who's listening to Spiegel and Holmes right now, they're probably groaning when they hear that, because they're like, really? Like, we're doing this again where it has to be an outperformance? That's why I'm trying to, when I'm thinking about the Cubs, I'm trying to think of who could actually do it. I don't think it's fair to ask Dansby Swanson at this point in his career to outperform projections.
I
know the contract says different.
Well, not only that, but the quality of offense last year as compared to the two or three years before says that there's more there, and it's his responsibility to find it.
I would be fine if he plays two projection. That's what I'm saying. Like, I expect him to play two projection.
Yeah.
And that to me is the accountability on him. But with PCA, there's still not enough of a sample size in the majors to know what type of player he actually is.
Yeah.
So to me, that's someone that I can identify and go, there's a place where playing over your projections could actually happen, and it's fair.
To that Cubs fan who's listening to the show right now, I wonder who they get mad at. If they get mad about, man, we need to overdo our projections, what the hell? Are they mad at Jed for that? Or does their madness go higher? And is the way that Jed talks about it giving you an opportunity to think about it? Have there been things that have gone on this spring, the way that Jed has talked and the way that ownership has talked, that allow you to aim perhaps not directly at Jed? Is that, I mean, we know he wanted Alex Bregman badly. And Alex Bregman wanted to come to the Cubs.
And Roky Sasaki.
Now, Roky, there was a limit to how much they could offer because of the posting and the timing and the way that works. And I think Roky decided he wanted L.A. either because of Shohei or because of L.A. and the Dodgers' largesse and all of that.
100%.
And it's a bummer.
I just wanted to point out that, amen, Jed made it clear when they were in Japan. Like, you could hear him on the marquee broadcast being like,
wanted him desperately.
Yeah, that guy's pretty good.
But Bregman is one where if the number was higher, the player might be here. And then the projections might be there, you know? So I wonder where the Cub fans' anger goes to when they hear Jed talk this way.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think we both had the same reaction after the interview, where you could read into what he said if you wanted to, and what he has said throughout the spring. But we asked him about being jealous of what the Mets have, what the Dodgers have, the amount of spending that they can do. Here's what he told us.
I don't know. I guess, I mean, it's probably life, right? I think that when I drive to the lakes, Sheridan, to head down to work some days, like, do I stop and get jealous and unable to complete my day looking at some of the houses on the water? Like, no, I don't. You got to do the best you can with what you have. And I think that's the job, right? You can't get jealous of everyone else. You know, they have their own challenges and own problems. And I think, you know, just knowing, you know, we knew what our payroll was. We knew what we had to do. And I think, you know, we worked hard this offseason to build the best team possible within that. And I just don't think you can get distracted by what others have. I don't think you can get distracted by, you know, jealousy as to your word or whatever, or complaining about it. You just move forward and try to do the best you can. And I think that there's only a handful of those in baseball, and that's a good thing, I think.
Yeah, we went biblical at that point. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's payroll.
And
you can't. So then the question becomes, what did he do with what he can control? Like, if he used the serenity to accept the things he cannot control, you know what I mean? Like, what did he do? He controlled the bottom of the roster. John Birdie's a better guy to have here. Gage Workman's a better guy to have here than Nick Madrigal and Miles Mastromone.
There's no doubt about it.
You know, he went and got Eli Morgan from Cleveland. That's a better dude to have towards the bottom of the bullpen than what he had. He found a way to go get Ryan Presley. Okay, he traded a bunch for Kyle Tucker. He gave up a prospect that he might regret giving up for Kyle Tucker. But he went and did some stuff that he could. I'll tell you this. The Cody Bellinger trade is a straight-up salary dump. Now, Cody Poteet got DFA'd. Cody Poteet, the pitcher they got from the Yankees, he got DFA'd the other day. So you got nothing. And you didn't end up replacing that money on the payroll. You didn't replace all of it. You know, remember those conversations? We thought they were going to replace all
yes.
of it. And he tried to. They tried to with Bregman. And maybe they tried to with another thing that we don't know about. Or I mean, maybe they tried to with a starting pitcher that they didn't end up getting. I like Matthew Boyd, by the way, and we won't see him for a little while. But I think that's a pretty good five with an opportunity for a much higher ceiling. But, like, so what did Jed do with what he could control? Did a decent job with what he could control.
And we'll see how it ends up working out. It's interesting seeing people react to it via text or inside the mob.
Yeah,
where,
what do you get?
Well, I mean, most people have kind of gotten to this place of, I'm angry at Jed, comma, but I understand that he's got budgetary limits, and the budgetary limits are out there on the Ricketts family.
Yeah.
I think that people do want to see him try and do the best that with what he does have.
Yeah.
But they understand that there's a limiting factor, and that's the budget that he's playing with. And it makes one wonder, too, if you're Jed and you do have success, obviously you'd like to see some of this stuff through. But you're also in a position, this is the flip side of the free agency. This is the flip side of him having one more year, being in the last year of his deal, is that if things do go well, he can be like, well, look, man, I'll stay. But I need a commitment that I am going to be armed with all of the things that I need to compete in today's baseball.
When you really zoom out and look at it, there's not many teams who are trying to do what the Cubs are trying to do, which is live at a payroll that approaches the first competitive balance tax level, but not go over it. You know, there's not, like, the Atlanta Braves are the comp that I continue to make because there's not many teams trying to do it. And what the Braves have done is assemble a young core and try to lock them all up and hope that they all work out, right? And then fill in by having a great system. And Spencer Strider is still cheap, and now he's back. Schwellenbach, their other starting pitcher, I like that dude a lot, is cheap as hell, and they haven't locked him up.
That's a good Sandler name.
Schwellenbach. Yeah, you're right.
That's a good Sandler name right there.
You're right. But like,
Danny, you get Sandler on the show
yeah,
now.
Yeah, Danny, my identity is the Carrot Top guy.
Okay.
You know? Shane is the Maddox guy. Shane is the Greg Maddox guy and the Musburger guy. Tanny, you got to step up and
now,
get Sandler.
Sorry, I definitely need to do more. Sorry about that.
Yeah, you really do.
I mean, really I can't do. Think of anyone who needs to do more.
Shane, you agree he's not doing enough?
Shane's in any event,
to show today.
But
so
one of Sandler's guys in his band is a big Chicago guy, right? So that's something that we could possibly attain, you know?
Yeah, I think we got a shot to attain that.
And
yeah.
then we have him say,
we're working on it.
Shall I'm bad.
So, yeah. you know, you, as always, you got to put it out there in the public space. So, you know, yeah. if anyone likes me out there in the audience, you could do me a solid. My job's on the line here. I got to get Adam Sandler on the show.
Yes.
Texter with a good question. Why does nobody look as hungover as Danny used to look during the Vegas shows? That's a really good question.
I think we're
all responsible adults, I think, is the answer.
Look, there was definitely some irresponsibility that was going on last night, too. But I think that the Danny, he is Mr. Vegas. So he loves it out here. And he is like, look, I get it, especially now with a couple of young kids. He's like, this is some freedom.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
go out there and go hard.
When you get out here. Yeah.
And again, hindsight is 20/20 on this stuff, listeners. You know, you see Danny now with the hair people, the makeup people, the wardrobe people. Like, you know, you look back in hindsight and you see Danny. Like,
right.
Yeah, that's just how Danny was.
Well, and now he knows if he does get hungover that the Fox people with their IV will come to the hotel.
Yeah,
or Mitch, for some reason. Remember when Mitch brought, you know, offered to bring the IV at the Super Bowl?
Well, he's helping me out today. He brought me hot tea.
Yeah, he brought you. Well, that's his job, man. He's going to take care of you.
I'm going to need another one, though.
I'll tell you.
Don't rely on Mitch anymore because he's got his party shorts
on.
That's what I'm saying. The transition has taken place.
Yeah, Mitch has got the shorts on,
dude,
and the polo.
Party Mitch has arrived, baby.
He has.
Oh, it's going to happen. Now, I think all the waitresses need to watch out.
I agree with all of that. We need to take a break because we want to take people inside the buildings, man. Yesterday was so wild. We've got two guests that were both inside the buildings for the wildness. Our guy Cody Westerlund is going to talk Bulls-Lakers with us. And then Connor McKnight is going to talk White Sox with us. Cody is next. Let's talk about that game winner with him and what it was like to be in the building on the school.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing.
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking, second-guessing every choice you make. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
StreetEasy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let StreetEasy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Four. When you're at a timeout and have to go in the full court, like, what are your guiding principles that you've instilled in practice? Is it get the ball to a guard and see what happens?
No, I mean, at that point, it's hard because, you know, first of all, when the ball goes in the basket like that, the first thing you're trying to do is just get it inbounded as quickly as possible and get it up the floor as quickly as possible. A lot of times you don't necessarily have the ability to set something up because, one, if you let the ball bounce and try to run a play, what ends up happening is you're letting the other team set their defense. It has to be a situation where it's almost like the way we've been playing, you know, for the full 48, up the floor and in. I mean, I gave Patrick did a great job centering the ball, and we've talked, I mean, obviously if you can advance it, kick it up, but you got to be able to get the ball out and up, and you just try to, whatever it was 3 seconds to go on the clock, 3 point, I mean, you got to try to get the ball up the court as quickly as possible. There's not necessarily that you can really diagram in that situation going the length of the floor. It's hard, you know, because especially on a made basket, dead ball, maybe a little bit different as a foul, or somebody steps out of bounds, you got to go the length of the floor, then you can maybe do something, but in that situation, it's awful hard.
It's funny, Speaks. I actually think that it helped them that it was a little out of control, a little helter-skelter, because then, you know, LA's like worried about getting back versus, well, let's check up and make sure that we make the inbound pass really difficult and all that stuff.
And how about Billy Donovan's point about that's the way we've been playing, free and loose and fast, and then maybe something good can happen. It reminds me of like puck luck or like just doing the right thing.
Greasy goals.
Yeah, greasy goals. Like, you know, just do the right thing and have the momentum and do what you do. And sometimes the breaks go your way because you're playing with the right motivation.
On Spiegel and Holmes today, we're talking about what an incredible day yesterday was in Chicago sports. The White Sox, they go out and win an opening day in impressive fashion. The Cubs went out in the desert. And the Chicago Bulls leading SportsCenter this morning, even with opening day of baseball, to Sweet 16. No, it was the Bulls over LeBron and Luka Doncic.
What is life? What is life?
Cody Westerlund was in the United Center last night. You heard him asking that really good question of Billy Donovan, and he joins us now on the Circa Las Vegas Resort Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Cody, set the scene for us. What was it like from an energy standpoint for the game overall and when Giddy hits that shot?
Oh, it was just incredible, guys. Absolutely incredible. And part of it, too, was because of how wild it had been, the back-to-back threes from Patrick Williams and Kobe White to put the Bulls up by 1 point with 6 seconds left. So, like, no one saw that coming. And then the Lakers to take the lead, no one saw the half-court shot coming. You felt something crazy and exciting was going to happen in the final minutes there. But to see it that way two times, to have those heroics and just kind of an incredible series of events and wild swings of emotion, it was awesome. Absolutely awesome. And it felt silent. I don't know that it was silent in the arena, but it felt silent when Giddy let the ball go. And then there was just the explosion and the hum of excitement. And it was almost just, I hadn't seen anything like it at the United Center, heard anything like it since Derrick Rose's buzzer beater in 2015 to beat the Cavaliers in Game 3 of the Eastern Conference semifinals. And that's what happens when you get a true buzzer beater. And just to kind of reiterate here, we've seen some buzzer beaters from the Bulls over the years, but Ayo Dosunmu had one in Atlanta. DeMar DeRozan had the two famous ones back-to-back in the 21-22 season as the calendar turned. We had not seen one at the United Center since Jimmy Butler hit one in 2016, so it had been a really long time at the UC for a true buzzer beater at the horn, which I think added to the effect of it. And why we go back, that horn blowing and the Bulls winning, it was Derrick Rose's moment was certainly bigger and more memorable, but this one was up there in what I had experienced.
Phenomenal context right there from Cody Westerlund, all those references, because I had seen it. Someone put it out there last night in the midst of everything that the UC hadn't been like that since Etwan Moore's game winner a decade ago. I remember there was a brilliant inbounds play where everybody
was
in
the
right. Yes, it was. Okay. Yes, it was, yep. Against the Oklahoma City Thunder. And just a beautiful inbounds play that had like a give and go. I think Etwan inbounded it and got it back, if memory serves. But, I mean, for the Bulls and their fans to have that moment and have the explosion, there's no denying this is a special moment. Like, just separate all the big picture consternation and all the trade deadline consternation and everything. Somehow, some way, this is a special moment for that team. Like, they're feeling it, celebrating together. Modest all over Josh Giddey for a young player who's developing like Modest to feel the joy of a ninth win in 11 games when you beat the Lakers with LeBron and Luka twice. Those things do have benefit for guys' careers to be involved in special moments like this.
Yeah, it's great to see the young players have success together for the first time like that, obviously, that they have in these past few weeks. But, like, I keep coming back to, like, the Bulls game was everything that's what was right with the NBA last night, right? Like, we talk all the time, like, stars resting. Obviously, the Bulls had a few guys that are legitimately hurt and not playing. But this is a team going really hard. And when you have both teams feel like there's something at stake, and you can argue whether there should be anything at stake for the Bulls, and I understand both sides of that argument. They feel there is. And when you have teams like this, Lakers playing for playoff positioning and seeding and one of LeBron's final chances and finally starting to fire on all cylinders here when they're healthy too, it can lend itself to moments like this. And like you said, ending up on the lead of SportsCenter because great, awesome things happen. So to me, that's what I felt was really cool, just seeing the Bulls' young guys now. Like, I don't want to get ahead of my skis and say because they're winning games now, it means they're going to start next season strong or anything. I feel like those are two separate, completely different components. But the young guys learning to play together does matter. And the decisions in the big moments matter too, I think. Because this is a team that some of its young guys, even early in the year and tracing back the last few years, they don't make enough good decisions in big moments. You saw them sharing the ball, shooting at the right time in the big moments last night. Patrick Williams hits the three. Giddey kicks it out to Kobe White. That was the right basketball play. As simple as it was, before Giddey's heave, the right basketball play was for Patrick Williams to not bring the ball up the court and give it to the point guard. So just small things like that, I thought that was good to see from them.
Cody knows ball. So I want to run this by you, Cody. I think LeBron James is one of the smartest players that has ever played the game. And there were two mistakes that he made that quite honestly shocked me. One of them was on the inbound. The other one, though, is him over-rotating to an open Vooch when an open Patrick Williams is in the corner. And with a guy whose basketball IQ is through the roof, you just have to look at the numbers in that moment and go, oh, Williams is the better shooter.
And he's in the corner.
And he's in the corner, and he's got the closer three. I was surprised to see a guy who I have, like, the utmost respect for the way he thinks the game, not think the game well in the last few seconds.
I was shocked, too. I mean, the Lakers beat writers, they have one of the biggest traveling beat writing corps in the country. I think they were all just shaking their head like they couldn't explain it either. That's not the type of plays they've seen over the years from him. So other than just, I don't know if he was tired and had that mental lapse, obviously, when you're tired, what it is. But it was shocking because he's made so many good decisions in so many big moments, not just in his career, but in that building at the United Center. We've seen it again and again. And what kind of cracked me up, too, was Patrick Williams hits the three, and Josh Giddey gives LeBron James the ball to inbound because it's kind of just sitting there bouncing. He's like, hey, here, LeBron. And then he knows it's going to reason. Giddey just takes it back from him. So that was just an added component of, like, how odd it was. And then Giddey cuts to the hoop, and Kevin Huerter actually pointed at Kobe White. I watched the replay a few more times this afternoon, and it looked like Giddey was going to go to the hoop to try to make a game-tying layup, and Herter's pointing out, and Giddey immediately kicks it. He's smart. So, like, it's just all the Bulls were doing the right things in the right moment there. And, yes, it all traces back to LeBron because none of that happens if they just complete an inbounds pass easily.
But how much do we have to give it up for Josh Giddey? The SportsCenter tag, at least last night, was Giddey up. And the dude is averaging 22 points, 10 assists, and 9.6 rebounds in his last 10 games. He's basically averaging a triple-double. And that steal, it's a great read, man. It's a great read. Yep. And just like the way that they're communicating, I love the Huerter thing. We have to give it up for what Josh Giddey is becoming. And he's only 22. So as much as we have felt about his game, and I've been vocal, God, Lawrence, you were vocal.
I'm still not a fan of his game, but I can acknowledge he's been playing great.
We got to acknowledge. And the steals numbers might be legit. And if so, that changes the way you think about him as a defender. His feet aren't quick, and he doesn't do things well as a one-on-one defender. But if he's got great instincts that help him get steals that can cover up some of it, I think, where are we on Josh Giddey as a player? It is, being that he's only 22.
Yeah, you should feel optimistic. There's no doubt about that. I think that optimism might recede a little bit when he signs his new contract with the Bulls this summer, and we'll have plenty of discussions next year. Can he play better defense, hard defense for 82 games, obviously, at a higher level than what he had shown for much of this year? But he is doing the right things right now, obviously. And you talk about the steals, Spiegs. Like, the rebounds stand out to me. 14 rebounds, just a monster number from someone who's a guard. And I know he's tall. I know he plays a point forward role and guards forward sometimes. But, like, that's just a lot of rebounds from the guy in that position. Helps the Bulls get up the court, get running. Matters to your team building. Because you look at guys like Patrick Williams is a terrible rebounder. So if you're lacking there, you want to make up for it for your guy that's playing a point guard position for you a lot of times. That's good. So there are some things that he can help cover teammates with. His strengths matching their weaknesses. And then in other areas, the Bulls are going to have to help pick him up. And that's what's going to be the responsibility of AK and Mark Eversley this summer, is to continue to build on the fringes. I don't think they're going to be able to do huge things, obviously, but make decisions that help in the whole comprehensive team building around some of these young guys they have.
Cody, thanks so much for setting the scene. It looked electric, man. It's one of those moments where you're like, man, I wish I was at home. You know, because it was so cool to see what was going on in the city. Thanks for letting us in a little bit as our on-the-spot passport.
Yep, you guys take care. Have a good rest of the trip.
Thanks, Cody. You know what we don't know about Josh Giddey is whether he's going to be a dog once he gets paid. That's what we don't know.
Speaks, this is all in that dread that I feel about all of this.
I get it, man. We just did the all-dog team the other day after talking about Patrick and Nate Davis and like some of the other dudes who got paid and then stopped caring. That's what we don't know.
Because if you look at the big sample size of how he plays,
yeah,
it's more of the disappointing guy with a whole bunch of talent versus him living up to his talent
right.
that we've seen over the last
right.
month.
And his last year in Oklahoma City, he stopped caring, and they benched him. They took him out of the rotation in the playoffs. So, but that was when he was 21. Now he's 22. Did a light bulb go on, or is he playing hard in a contract year?
Maybe it's contract. Maybe it's Billy. You know, who knows?
It could be Billy. Like, maybe Billy won't let it happen, you know?
Maybe.
But if we're talking about Patrick and Billy just letting that happen sometimes, like, I don't know.
So check this out. We took you to the United Center with our guy Cody Westerlund. Let's take you to 35th and Shields. What was it like over there yesterday? Our guy Connor McKnight is going to join us to discuss it next on The Score.
Welcome into the booth, everybody. I'm Connor McKnight. He's Darren Jackson. Two away for the White Sox in the ninth, and it's up to Luis Robert Jr. 0-1, shot to right. This could be trouble, and it's fair. A home run! Pesky's pulled. It's the White Sox, Luis Robert Jr. with home run number 38, the shortest home run he'll ever hit.
He has got to be overjoyed with that result.
As they should be. Everyone is overjoyed with the result of the White Sox yesterday.
Overjoyed. Yeah, man. How can you not be? Your opening day starter looked like that. You know, and you know, I mentioned like the vibes of a new manager. This was Corey Lee. It's a new team, a new manager. Fans were unbelievable today. Felt like a new year. That's kind of the moral of the story. Flip the page. It's actually turn the page, but we can settle that with Corey at a later date.
No, it's totally fine. Watching what has happened with Connor McKnight's career is honestly like amazing and inspiring. Seeing that he's going to be a part of CHSN's coverage, you're going to see him doing features, you're going to see him doing reports, you're going to see him doing play-by-play. Man, I couldn't be happier for this guy. One of the really good people in our business. He joins us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Connor McKnight. Connor, walk us through the atmosphere over at 35th and Shields yesterday.
Well, hello, fellas, and thanks for having me, and thanks for the kind words. It was a lot of fun. It was crazy. You know, I'm learning a new job and remembering to face the correct direction into a camera as opposed to running away from one. So there's a lot going on. You know, we got to ride around in some awesome Fords on the way around the ballpark track with, let's see, Brooke was with Jonathan Cannon, and I was with Davis Martin. A lot of people in the ballpark and a lot of excitement for it. I think, you know, whether you're turning or flipping or folding or burning a page, I think a lot of White Sox fans are ready to do the same come 2025. And listen, you saw a really good outing from Sean Burke. You saw him really get his stuff back together after the bumps in that first inning. You saw Corey and he go to the fastball, go to the slider a little bit and some success because of it. And I saw, you know, listen, This is a lineup that you say Kikuchi is a guy that can be platooned against, and you saw the manager and the roster put together two platoon against Kikuchi, and that's how you get the homer from Austin Slater and get the scoring started. I mean, those kinds of things, those are the kinds of things you wanted to have happen this year that maybe didn't happen enough last season, right?
Well, stay right there and tell us anything else you think is pertinent about Will Venable, because he's a smart guy who's been on a ton of great coaching staffs, who's worked for a lot of really, really good managers. Managers like Bruce Bochy, who are great with the soft factors, and, you know, managers who are great with analytics and great with strategy. So, I mean, I love that the players are inspired and know they've got a real one. What else did you see or feel from Will Venable yesterday?
Yeah, I think one of the things, Spiegs, was, you know, right before Sean Burke took the field, I had Will for a couple of questions on the broadcast, like right before we're coming on the field to start. And I had asked him leading up to that, you know, at what point does the competitive nature kick in for you? Like, at what point do you get this whole, like, if spring's not happening anymore, all this other kind of stuff, like, let's go get him. And he's like, man, that's been like a week long. You know, now we get to do the game planning. Now we get to go get it. Now we get to do all of the things that we thought, you know, we could be, you know, smart about, or like good ideas that we had, all this stuff. You get to put it in practice and put it up against another team. And I think you saw that bear fruit. And sure, it helps when Ron Washington's leaving a 19-year-old kid who never pitched in college ball in a little bit longer than you should. But you took advantage of that, which is also very good. And the other option there is not taking advantage of that kid staying in for nine batters too long, right? And I think when you see, you know, some of those moves get made, some of those platoons and matchups get made. And I think, guys, too, like, when you see some of the roster moves made, right, optioning guys out of a bullpen, bringing guys up, fresh arms, all that kind of stuff, those are the things on the margin that this coaching staff and front office are working together to find the advantages on, as opposed to just pivoting to whatever guy is next because you've spent the bullets on this other dude, right?
Connor McKnight joining us. You can watch him on CHSN, be a part of White Sox coverage. The Derrick Rose stuff was pretty awesome yesterday, Connor. I know that you probably knew that that's what was going to happen, but the reaction from the folks over at 35th and Shields was excellent, and I thought that it set a great tone to start the season.
It was really cool. You know, one of my friends, and I told him that, I told myself, don't do this. And then he walked up, you know, right before the interview, and I couldn't help myself because he's Derrick Rose. Like, one of the first assignments that I got when I was working at the Score was going to cover Derrick Rose on a night where he had, like, I don't know, I think it was like his first 30 night or something like that. It was really cool, and I told him so. And he was like, oh, man, it makes me feel really old. And I said, yeah, you think you're old. I'm even older. And it was awesome. Like, the view was great. The picture was perfect. The fans, I mean, my first question to him was, what does it feel like to get MVP chants everywhere you go in this town? And he just said, love. I mean, that's what this is. And I think it's really cool to have watched that guy mature, the relationship between, you know, him and fans here in this town, whether you're, you know, a White Sox fan or a Cubs, like, you watched this whole thing happen and you understood what it was as it got late and that it wasn't as pretty as it could have been. I just have so much. I mean, you guys know, you listen to some shows that I did while I was there. I wouldn't say basketball is my strong suit, but Derrick Rose was my, like, that's a thing, man. And it was really cool to have him for a couple of minutes.
Hey, Connor, you know, we're going to talk about T.A. and Moncada as part of our next segment, but let me ask you about the Nicky Lopez reaction. What was the sound? What was the vibe as former White Sox and former Cub Nicky Lopez was pitching in that ballgame for the Angels?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, watching everybody around the concourse kind of collectively really, it was almost like the wave was going around the bowl. But it wasn't like actual people doing the wave. It was like, oh, my God, it's a position player. Oh, my God, it's Nicky Lopez. Hey, did you see Nicky Lopez is on the mound? Like, it was kind of one of those things. I don't know. Have you guys done this? Have you guys looked this up or seen the fun fact? Is this the earliest in a season a position player has ever pitched? It's got
to
be really close.
It's
got to be really close. I think it was, for some fans, nice to see Nicky back in the ballpark. I think for others, the turning and burning of the pages was probably more the forefront of the mind.
When it comes to what the White Sox as an organization have in front of them, this journey that Chris Getz and Will Venable have to go on now to rebuild everything, what are the things that give you hope when it comes to them maybe turning this thing slowly around?
Yeah, I think, Lawrence, I think some of those answers are industry consensus, right? And I think when it comes to the prospects they got back in the Garrett Crochet trade, you're hearing some of that stuff. And it's not like, you know, everybody who ranks prospects knows this better than the front offices or anything, or even vice versa to that point. But when you're getting the prospects back and you're like, oh, man, they got Braden Montgomery in that deal, you know, a guy that's got a whole bunch of upside and pop is an up, like, those sorts of things matter to me, I think. The other idea that, I mean, the Brian Bannister of it is important. And that's not just at a major league level trying to find funky arms to throw into a bullpen, and kind of give you multiple looks and find something going there late in the innings that you could maybe trade later. That's all well and good. But it's also identifying those types of arms and using those same processes to go down into the minor leagues and identify guys either coming out of the draft or minor league free agents that you make some tweaks on and also apply better roles to. I think it'll be really interesting to watch, especially early on in the season. You get a guy in Nick Nastrini down at Triple A Charlotte who's going to start for a little while given the injuries that they've had, but there have been some issues there. There's not to say that there's not some high-octane stuff in that arm yet. Let's see what some of those processes work like. I wonder if the transition is near for Nick Nastrini, and I wonder if that's a potential, you know, leverage arm in the back end of a bullpen at some point. I think those are the ways that you kind of evaluate this front office over the next 6 months. And those are the kind of things that give me hope as well. The finding of the talent, the unveiling of some of that talent that they're able to kind of grab from other places.
Connor, because we like you, we care about you, we're not going to ask you about the horrific trades that brought Dominic Fletcher and Jake Eater, since both of those guys got DFA'd this week. We're not going to do that because we care about you. We're just going to say thank you for this report.
And congratulations, man.
Congratulations.
Sincerely. Oh,
absolutely. Thanks, on everything you're doing, and keep basking in the glow. You and White Sox fans deserve to have a lovely moment like this. Full stop.
1-0, baby. 1-0, and that's all that matters. It feels good. It's a nice day. It is 78 in the city, beautiful. And I have not struck anyone. I have not struck anyone with luggage yet today. So it's the best 2 days of my life.
Oh, speaks hands.
The best 2 days I've had in a long time.
See, there's a man who understands. Well, also, you know, Connor's also like 6'8".
Yeah.
You know, like, it's right. A little easier for him.
Sure.
All he is just tall and lanky. Yeah. All he does is climb rocks and stuff.
I don't recommend hitting an invalid with your luggage on a plane. I don't recommend that at all.
No.
Thank you, Connor.
No, thanks, Connor. That's Connor McKnight.
Anytime,
from
boys.
CHSN. Man, I'm so, God, I just adore that dude, man.
I know it. Like, so we shouldn't either, right? We shouldn't talk about Dominic Fletcher and Jake Eater.
No, you did, though, and now you've done it twice.
Okay, well, we shouldn't talk about how Kenny Williams went over the head of Rick Hahn to deal with Miami because he knows Kim Ng and he made an absolute garbage trade. We don't need to do that.
Not Rick's fault. No,
not Rick's fault. I was hoping that we could just leave Rick and Kenny alone for a while.
Yeah, how long? A day?
3 years.
Whoa, no chance.
No, not that long.
3 days. I'll bring him up on Hit and Run. I won't mention him again. And maybe I won't even mention him then.
All right.
I'll talk to Steve Stone on Sunday on Hit and Run.
Is that right?
Yeah, he's coming on Sunday, among other people. Absolutely.
Okay, good.
So, yeah, but I won't even bring him up then. We'll just let this moment be what it is.
Okay, good, because I was very afraid because, you know, we've been trying to build bridges and – You are strapping bridges with dynamite anytime we try to build one, and you didn't today.
I'll just say Bill Veeck from now on.
See?
Nice and clean.
There it is.
Yep.
Snively Whiplash again with the dynamite. That sounds like a former host. All right. We need to take a break. Since we brought up the White Sox, I don't know if White Sox fans noticed this yesterday.
Yeah.
There was a lot of ex-White Sox action going on around Major League Baseball.
Yeah, there was.
It was probably slightly too much?
Yeah, well, there's a lot.
Ex-White Sox action going on opening day around the league.
And the fans' reaction to T.A. and Moncada needs to be delved into a little bit as well.
Yeah, let's do all of that next here on The Score.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.